Candace Rowan with Aquila Group of Funds. Today is September 3rd, and I'm joined by Chris Johns, Portfolio Manager of Aquila Tax Free Fund of Colorado. Chris also co-manages Aquila Tax Free Trust of Oregon with Tim Eltz. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Candace.
Thank you for joining me today. We last spoke in April following the outbreak of the pandemic and the dramatic market events that occurred at the end of the first quarter. What has transpired for the municipal market since March?
Well, we've seen a remarkable recovery in the muni market after a brief week or two of a very tumultuous price movement in the muni market. We've seen yields decline to new low levels. So I would say it's been very strong. Most of that has been led by investor demand, and we also saw the return of banks and insurance companies to the municipal bond market, where they had been absent for a couple of years since the Tax Cut and Jobs Act reduced corporate taxes. Banks and insurance companies didn't have as much need for munis, but when the interest rates between municipal bonds and treasuries really kind of disconnected, and we saw muni rates much higher than taxable rates, those two sectors, banks and insurance companies, came back in a very strong way and remain in the muni market. All that was happening early on in the second quarter when there was kind of limited supply as issuers were nervous about bringing new deals in that uncertain market. But since then, we've seen supply pick up pretty remarkably, and demand has remained very, very high because tax-free rates are still in the 2, 5, and 10-year area, slightly higher than they are in the treasury market. So demand is still very high for muni. So that's a good sign of strength.
Focusing specifically on the fund, Aquila's municipal strategies have a relatively conservative investment mandate. How did this management style impact your shareholders' experience through the volatility this year?
Well, over the past 2 or 3 years in our fund, our management style has really recognized the fact that risk was becoming mispriced. And what we mean by that is we had seen the yield curve get a little flatter, where the difference between long rates and kind of intermediate rates was narrower and narrower. And then probably even more importantly, credit spreads, the difference between high-rated bonds and lower-rated bonds, had reached some of the narrowest levels that we've seen in decades. So for us, over the last 2 or 3 years, we had really increased the credit quality of our portfolios and shortened the maturity and duration slightly in the portfolio. And when risk presented itself through the form of a pandemic and all the uncertainty associated with that, style that we use, the lower risk style that we use, held up very well in that kind of market. The sectors that we've invested in over the last couple of years and the quality of bonds that we've invested in held up very well because the revenues behind them are a little bit more certain than some of the more speculative sectors out there. So I think the shareholder experience for our fund was reasonably good. I mean, the fund did what it was supposed to do. We've always been a little less volatile than most of our competition, and then that held true in the very tumultuous times we saw in particularly March and April.
Always good when your planning pays off. Shifting to the Fed's response to events this year, after offering no assistance during the previous financial crisis, the Fed stepped up this year and offered some aid to the municipal market. What was different this time, and can you give us an update on how the CARES Act and the Municipal Liquidity Facility have offered assistance to state and local governments?
Well, you're exactly right about that, Candace. That is something that's different this time. In previous market disruptions, the Federal Reserve, in the last 15 or 20 years, has been very active in the taxable market, but never so much in the municipal bond market. And this time, they fully recognized the challenges that state and local government was going to have. And so they came up with some specific plans to help state and local government. In Colorado, for the CARES Act, Colorado is expected to receive about $2.2 billion in direct federal funding. Some of the notable places that money is going, the Denver International Airport is going to receive about $269 million. RTD, which is the bus and light rail system, is going to receive about $232 million. State's Department of Higher Education, about $450 million. And then several counties and cities, you know, will also receive direct funding. And that is something that is different that we haven't seen from the Fed regarding state and local governments before. We think that this federal funding has made a difference in state and local finance. It hasn't made up for all the revenue losses that these various sectors are experiencing, but it's definitely made a difference in easing the way a little bit. Our concern will be more a year from now to see, you know, what kind of shape the economy's in, if it's not growing at the level that we hope for, will it be a situation where we receive additional federal funding to these various sectors or not? So all this CARES funding has been a great thing for state and local government, but will it continue? As far as the municipal liquidity facility, that allows big muni issuers, certain, you know, states, cities, and large local issuers to borrow money on a short-term basis that needs to be referred to the Fed. So far, that has not been really accessed that much, just by some of the lower quality issuers. I believe State of Illinois and then the MTA in New York is the only issuers that have accessed the liquidity facility. So there I would say that it's probably more of a, you know, it's good that they're there for that, but practically speaking, the pricing of it is a little expensive for most issuers to actually use the municipal liquidity facility, you know, unless the structure of interest rates changes dramatically over the next few months. We expect that to probably continue. We won't see a lot of use of that facility.
Chris, you have extensive experience managing munis, and you've managed them through many market cycles. I want to get your thoughts on the rumors around defaults. Municipalities appear to be resilient and prepared to sustain any temporary revenue shortfalls, but we're still hearing rumors about default risk. Do you consider those rumors valid?
Well, default's a very strong word, Candace. You know, in the Aquila funds, we've always had a mandate of using investment-grade quality in our portfolios. And in that space, the instance of default is going to be exceptionally low. So for our funds, not so concerned about that. I think the way we would describe it is more concerns about potential credit ratings downgrades. In any kind of economic slowdown, whether it's a recession or, you know, even 10 years ago, the Great Recession, any kind of economic slowdown, you would expect to see some credit deterioration. And we think that will happen. I mean, obviously, with revenues being impacted as much as they are in certain sectors, you know, you could see some credit rating downgrades. But you have to remember that before the pandemic started, in our state, we were operating at an exceptionally high level of economic performance. I mean, we, you know, had record levels of tax collections. And the economy is doing very well, real estate's doing very well, and so we were coming from a position of strength, which is a real important thing to understand when this hit. So although we may see some ratings downgrades, it's not going to be something that, you know, we're concerned about issuers not being able to pay the principal and interest on their bond. Nothing like that. So, yeah, there could be credit deterioration, but I think default is a pretty strong word. You will see them nationally for certain enterprise sectors, particularly, you know, retirement and assisted living homes and other enterprises that don't have any form of of credit support, but that, you know, that's not the type of things that we use in our funds. Generally speaking, we think that issuers are behaving responsibly. They're adjusting their budgets, some of them significantly due to the uncertainty. And you know, and those adjustments in budgets may come in revenue projections. Some have already targeted a certain amount of layoffs that they may have for their department or organization. And so they're going to react quickly to this as they have in the past, probably even more so because it's been so abrupt. So issuers, generally speaking, are behaving in a rational, responsible fashion, and we think that they'll do the best they can to maintain the credit ratings that they currently have.
Let's shift to the Fed now. What type of stimulative monetary policy do you expect going forward this year? News from the Fed this week seems to signal that we'll see more accommodation soon, potentially this month.
Well, it's no secret that the Fed is going to say, has said that they're going to do whatever it takes. So I think it's likely there could be another round of some type of stimulative activity. It's difficult at this time of year with an election coming up on how exactly that's going to come together, but I think it's likely that there'll be something else. And I also think that the Fed has made it very clear they plan to keep interest rates, you know, lower for longer this time around and be as accommodative as they can. Some of you may have heard of the concept of yield curve control, where what the Federal Reserve would do is target the interest rate on certain maturities in the Treasury curve. Say a 2-year will be at this rate, and a 5-year we want to target this rate, and a 10-year, and so on. It's possible they do that, but I think it, at least as we speak today, I think that that's unlikely. I think that, you know, with all the other measures they're doing, they're going to wait and see how that turns out. But you can be certain that they're committed to keeping the financial markets operating in a rational fashion, and the economy has the ability to recover by their lending. So we think they're going to be on the side of recovery for the foreseeable future.
What is your outlook for the muni market regarding new issues and supply and demand as we head into the end of the year?
Yeah, that's been probably one of the most important factors that's impacted the muni market this year, and I think for the rest of this year. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, a lot of new issuance was kind of put on the sidelines during March and April as issuers were concerned about trying to bring debt to the market at a period when it was very volatile and uncertain the reception they would get. But since then, as interest rates have really declined to new lows in the muni space. We've seen supply pick up pretty quickly and pretty dramatically. And we think that will continue for the rest of the year. There's a couple of things that impact that supply. In Colorado so far this year, in the first half, new issuance was actually 10% higher than it was last year, and that's largely due to, you know, large amounts of calls and maturities in Colorado municipal bond issuers. Demand for the new issuance has been very strong. Usually, the new deals were repriced at lower interest yields, and then we also have an election coming up, and we already know of two very large issues that are going to be on the Colorado ballot in November, with Denver Public Schools coming with $800 million in new issuance, and I think Cherry Creek with another multi-hundred million dollar new issuance. So we've got a couple of big ones there. I'm sure there'll be some more that we hear about. So supply will improve. That will help for the previous few months. In Colorado, the supply has been tight, and particularly in the secondary market. Issues are very well received. They trade at very narrow spreads. and it's hard to source bonds. So it's been tight, driven by demand. But we're hoping with the new supply we get for the second half of the year that it'll help that situation.
When you were speaking about supply, you mentioned school bonds. Can we tease our listeners and let them know to expect a school bond article from your team closer to the election?
Sure. We've made a practice of that in Colorado. We talk about either what will be on the issue, or sometimes we wait until after the election and talk about what's passed. In Colorado, we've recently done an article on the higher ed sector, which I'd encourage people to read because that's an area that we think is under some pressure. So I would look at that. And then as far as the new issuance, I won't say if we'll do it before the election or after, but you'll see one of those things happen.
That's great. I know that your shareholders and your financial professional partners really enjoy reading those. Let's wrap things up. After everything we've talked about today, are there any sectors that you're watching closely?
Yes, Candace, there are. As you know, we think one of our greatest strengths is the credit research that we do in the state. In Colorado, there are several sectors that we're watching very closely. And I would name them higher ed, which we're concerned about because it faces pressures from reduced state funding, potential headcount reductions, which we're starting to see, the increased expenses that they have to handle COVID-related issues, and then also tuition controversies about, should students pay the same, when they're looking online versus whether they're in person. So that's a sector that we're watching very closely. Transportation in Colorado. The Denver Airport is doing better than you might think. They, going into this whole thing, had a little over 2 years' cash of operating funds on the balance sheet, plus the additional federal funding that I mentioned coming from the CARES program. So that's probably going to be okay for now. RTD, the bus and light rail system, is under some fairly serious pressure right now. So we're watching them very closely. We have very limited exposure to that in the portfolio, but we are watching that closely. And then, obviously, anything that sales tax back, some of the recent numbers we've seen there is, consumers in Colorado are amazingly resilient. They've already started to kind of start spending again in an aggressive fashion. So we've seen sales tax improvement start to rebound. And then finally, the healthcare facilities, hospitals in general, that were negatively impacted early on when they had to stop elective procedures, which have now restarted and improving revenues there. But still, we want to watch that very closely as that's a very sensitive sector to this disease. So there are several that we're watching closely. As you know, we think our strength here in Colorado is our ability to do credit research on issuers that we've owned for decades, and we have good relationships with them. And, we really think that benefits our shareholders to stay on top of the credits there better than most. An important distinction to note in the municipal bond issuance area is general obligation versus revenue bonds. For those issues in our portfolio that are tax-backed, which is largely property tax-backed, those issues hold up very nicely throughout this pandemic. And in our portfolio, around 40 to 50% of the portfolio is represented by these tax-backed issuers. And for those, in our state, real estate has remained very strong. The value of homes has actually increased from a year ago. And so the credit strength of those issuers is doing just fine as long as real estate values continue to hold up. And we believe they will. So it's important to note that big percentage of our portfolio in these tax-backed bonds is largely, unaffected by this pandemic, and we think that's important to understand.
Chris, thank you for joining me today and offering your insight and valuable expertise.
My pleasure, Candace. Talk with you soon.
Absolutely. And I'd like to let all of our listeners know that the articles that Chris and his team provide on the municipal market can be found on the Aquila Group of Funds website at aquilafunds.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Before investing in the fund, carefully read about and consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and other information found in the fund prospectus. The prospectus is available from your financial advisor when you visit aquilafunds.com or call 800-437-1020. Information regarding holdings is subject to change and is not necessarily representative of the entire portfolio. Mutual fund investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible. Investments in bonds may decline in value due to rising interest rates, a real or perceived decline in credit quality of the issuer, borrower, counterparty, or collateral, adverse tax or legislative changes, court decisions, market or economic conditions. Fund performance could be more volatile than that of funds with greater geographic diversification. The fund seeks to provide as high a level of income exempt from state and federal income tax as is consistent with capital preservation. For certain investors, some dividends may be subject to federal and state income taxes, including the alternative minimum tax, referred to as AMT. Please consult your tax professional. Independent rating services such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch assign ratings which generally range from AAA, highest, to D, lowest, to indicate the creditworthiness of underlying bonds in the portfolio. Where the independent rating services differ in the ratings they assign to an issue or do not provide a rating for an issue, the highest available rating is used in calculating allocations by rating. Pre-refunded or escrowed bonds are issued for the purpose of retiring or redeeming an outstanding bond issue at a specific call date. Until the call date, the proceeds of the bond issuance are typically placed in a trust and invested in U.S. Treasury bonds or state and local government securities. Modified and effective duration both measure the value of a security in response to a change in interest rates. Effective duration also takes into account the effect of embedded options. The weighted average life, also referred to as weighted average maturity, is a reflection of the quickness with which the principal of an issue is expected to be paid. A credit spread is the difference in yield between two bonds of similar maturity but different credit quality. Taxable equivalent yield is the return that is required on a taxable investment to make it equal to the return on a tax-exempt investment. For certain investors, net investment income tax, known as NIIT, may apply. NIIT is a 3.8% tax established by the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that applies to the lesser of the net investment income or a taxpayer's modified adjusted gross income in excess of an applicable threshold amount. The acronym PERS, P-E-R-S, stands for Public Employee Retirement System. The acronym PERA, P-E-R-A, stands for Public Employees Retirement Association.